man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Can you please come in?
Point of order.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to Sunday Times Politics Weekly. It's that time again where the Sunday Times politics team sits down and unpacks the news for you in the only way we know how. And that is extremely raucous.
Yeah.
In the studio today, we have Zingisa Mvumvu, Apiwe de Klerk, and Zimasa Matuane. Hi, guys. Thank you for joining me. So, we had a front page story in the Sunday Times that raised a lot of eyebrows, as we try to do every week. Zingisa, your story on the front page of the Sunday Times, together with Andisiwe Makinana, our colleague in Cape Town, run us through it.
Well, Q, thank you very much for the opportunity. As you say, well, basically, the long and short of it is that the story really, exposes the DA to some of the contradictions that it has, within its ranks. The story is about, first, Diane Colabarnett, a very, well, I would say by now a proven racist, if that story is anything to go by, who's this time around again involved in a racist, type of a situation where she's alleged to have said that most of the problems in the country are instigated by black people, and then she also made some xenophobic remarks of Zimbabwean people having to go back to Zimbabwe because Mugabe is no longer the president there. And the irony in that is that she's not on the racist flank. She's not doing it for the first time. You would remember there was that controversial Facebook post about Botha that she shared, and yeah, the DA sort of tried to discipline her, but really there were no consequences. And this time around again, there are no consequences because she's heading back to parliament again after the elections. Mm. And then on the contrary, on the other side, we have this female politician in Ekurhuleni, who's the councillor of the DA there. She complains against the chairperson of the caucus
in
Ekurhuleni that she was sexually harassed, and then the DA engages in this flimsy type of disciplinary that is not even clear whether there was a hearing. The lady is called to a hearing. On the way, she's told, no, go back, we'll do a teleconference, and then the guy is cleared. But when the guy is cleared, which, well, it's not, the people...
Who is the guy? What is
Sharo Shabangu, the chairperson of the caucus there, of the DA caucus. He's cleared, and then the lady, Tina Bambeni, the DA goes ahead to charge the lady, which is unheard of. In fact, that in itself is in contrary with the constitution of the DA in terms of their policy on sexual harassment, which does say that people who complain about sexual harassment shall not be victimized thereafter, and that their complaints shall not be trivialized. But in this regard, that is exactly what the DA, because they went on to charge her for making unsubstantiated, they say, allegations, and then they went on to remove her from the list at the request of the provincial leader, John Moon.
So she was meant to be on the list to the provincial legislature?
And the National Assembly.
And she was removed.
And she was removed.
Because she accused someone of sexual harassment.
Absolutely.
I feel like the DA is self-sabotaging. How do you discipline someone who lays a charge of sexual harassment? A victim of sexual harassment must now be charged. If this was the ANC, the DA would have been in absolute furor at the moment, releasing 12 media releases per hour. What do you think, Apiwe?
Look, the story, it shows you that when it comes to the two issues, I'm not sure if the party takes them light or is not serious, because there is a similar case, or let's say there is a case of an MP, I just forget his name, who also was involved in an issue of sexual harassment back in 2016.
I think so, yeah.
When he placed a hand of a female colleague during a protest. The guy was found guilty, but he continued. Same way as
He's still a member of parliament.
He I think he got a suspended sentence. Same way as Diane Kolapanad. So, again, she's a repeat offender. But there's another issue of sexual harassment. Again, it seems as if, I don't know, I mean, for a party like the DA, it's issues they should be able to deal with. Because they have a formal sort of legal structure, the FLC, which there serves people who have got knowledge of the law. I mean, the chairperson of that is a former prosecutor. Issues like this should be easily dealt with. No one should be victimized for reporting sexual harassment. I mean, it's odd.
Zima said the thing is, the lists have been released, the ANC's list, the DA's list, and the EFF's list. Obviously, those are the big parties' lists for the National Assembly and the provincial legislatures for after the elections. And there was a lot that people said about the ANC's list. The fact that Nomvula Mokonyane was on the list, the fact that Batabile Dlamini. For me, there is no difference to Diane Kolapanad being on the DA list and Nomvula Mokonyane. For me, that it's the same thing.
I think we fail to hold the DA in the same standard that we hold the ANC in, because we have this thing that now they are just a Smolanyana party, now they are just opposition. But the reality is that the DA governs a lot of municipalities. They govern very powerful metros. We should start being as critical of the DA as we are of the ANC. In instances of racism, I am not sure if, you know, diehard racists can repent, especially on instances where there is no real consequences or a sanction that is going to say, we cannot have you in parliament, hence you cannot have this income. You know, people must feel it, must feel it in their pockets. Racists, we must make social spaces uncomfortable for them. They must, I don't want a racist in parliament. I don't know why that woman was still in parliament even after the whole apartheid nostalgia thing that they did of missing both.
And the thing is that you know, the DA's argument is that, you know, you can't, that she's not been found guilty of racism, so to say. And I saw this tweet by a DA leader in Etiquette. She says, I've known Diane Kolapanad for over 10 years and I have had my fair share of disagreements with her. However, she would never say all Zimbabweans are criminals or similar nonsense. It's just not how she thinks or speaks. This is completely ridiculous.
Nicole is being a racism and xenophobic apologist.
But not only that, for me, this Zed, like a lot of the tweets that were protecting Zuma when Zuma was embattled, for me, I was like, well, Zuma wasn't guilty of Zuma's not corrupt by the court of law.
Yeah.
So why is,
for the fact that you have a caucus leader of Etegwini municipality, someone who sits in such a powerful position, and they go out and they tweet that, remember, Nicole was not present when Kolapanad, when this incident happened, but she has the balls to go on social media and tweet that. It just tells you that there are no consequences in the DA to those things.
And she knows that nothing is going to happen.
She knows.
To her too.
And listen, Kwanita, when it happens in her caucus, do you think a black person who is offended by racism, whether intended or not, will be able to say, my leader, Nicole, I don't like what ABC said? You know, you get things like, I was in grade 2 with this Becky. And I know she's not racist. I mean, you were not there when they said offensive things.
You see, the point you are making about Zuma, this was presented, or this the chief whip was told about this, and he reprimanded her. Do you think he reprimanded her the same way Zuma did with this minister?
This story for me was extremely important, and I think that the reaction that the DA had to the story is indicative of how tolerant they are to be put under scrutiny. And I think that the DA is happy to clap when we write stories about the EFF or about the ANC or the ANC government. But as soon as they're at the receiving end, where we scrutinize and we go deeper into what's happening in their party, it becomes as if, there's an agenda, everything is fake news, and there's no sort of till now I'm yet to see what is going to happen. Has the DA decided to reopen this case at Diane Kola Barnard? What is there any development to say, okay, we understand the gravity of the situation? Like I'm saying, this weekend I sat and I thought about it, and I'm like, Musi Maimane, in just ignoring the fact and allowing Diane Kola Barnard to be on the list, is no different to Ace Magashule saying, no, as long as you're not found to be criminal, you know, you're not found guilty by a court of law, then you're sharp to be on the list. For me, that's the exact same thing.
It's exactly the same too. And the funny part is that the DA are always on the offensive when the ANC says these things about some of its leaders who are embroiled in this kind of situations. I mean, the DA was up in arms recently with regards to Pule Mabe and Zizi Kodwa type of situations, releasing statements left, right and center, but those people were never found guilty by a court of law, but at least the ANC indeed acted. So, I mean, that's the thing too, at least the ANC did something, although the ANC, for instance, doesn't even have a sexual harassment policy, but at least there's some action that they took on Pule, that because this dents the party, at least you can step aside in the meantime while you investigate these things. A DA that has an existing sexual harassment policy just lets people be, instead victimizes that. And kind of message that is sent through other women who are within the party is that in the future, if I'm sexually harassed and I complain to the party, I'm going to face the music for complaining. So people will be scared. Like it instills fear among the women within the DA. And Don, I haven't heard them say anything. Just goes to show that they are as good as a toothless. At least the ANC Women's League releases statements and calls for people.
But I mean, I'm not in the business of saying the ANC is better than the DA, but I feel like in this particular case, the DA needs to face the same scrutiny that it expects from other from the media to do about other political parties.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you look on the Diane Kola Barnard issue, when you are a repeat offender, I mean, the previous sanctions should automatically be taken into consideration. Why are they not saying, okay, because you were found guilty, and that now it's a, I mean, I don't understand. They should take action immediately. And this is, it's an old case. It's not like it's something that happened 2 weeks ago.
So moving on, obviously with the elections coming up, political parties are going across the country promising various things to their constituencies. A big issue, and which falls under the bread and butter issues of the elections, is obviously education. It's been 25 years since the advent of democracy. People are expecting more in terms of just providing basic education for South African children. And so political parties have been making a lot of promises. The ANC has made a certain amount of promises, right? But I'm quite fascinated in what the president says when he goes out campaigning. There is never a time where he doesn't talk about his initiative to roll out tablets in schools. He uses that heavily as a campaigning tool. He talks about that students need to get involved in coding and artificial intelligence and the fourth industrial revolution, something the ANC itself isn't really big on in its manifesto, but it's almost his own project that he's promising to people, to say your kids are going to get tablets. But the ANC's manifesto itself focuses on early childhood development, something that they have been very big on. The Tivet Colleges, which is training and vocational educational centers, community colleges, and they obviously talking about free quality higher education. So early childhood development has been something that Andrew Motshekga has been pushing for a very long time. If you compare it with other manifestos of other political parties, everyone is in agreement that early childhood development has to be compulsory for all children. But the ANC has been a little bit more vague in terms of what you know, this free education will look like. The president said obviously there will be this rollout, but there's been numerous problems with NASFAS. The biggest issue has been whether this free education will result in quality education, but more importantly, a boost to the economy.
I think the more people who have a qualification and the more people who are employed and participating in the economy and growing our GDP is a good thing. I'm sure we can all agree on that. In terms of ECD, that's where education begins, right? So it's important for government to not just say, yes, we want early childhood development, we need to pay attention to that. It exists, but the problem is the funding. The problem is the money for classroom for these children, classrooms that are kind of like stimulating to the young mind, the reading material or writing material or whatever it is the kids do at creche. But also it's about the remunerating the practitioners, ECD.
And training them, really.
And training them. So what I've noticed mostly in rural, you know, schools, most of them are not treated as teachers, which I think is a bit unfair.
But the issue is we don't have the economy. We don't have the
money
to pay ECD practitioners teacher salaries, really.
Well, we may not pay them teacher salaries per se, Kwanita, but they should have medical aid. They should be contributing to the pension fund, and they should be paid monthly. They shouldn't have to wait for 4 months and claim to the department and you know, a whole lot of nonsense that's happening there. So in terms of, we need to strengthen the infrastructure in that phase of education and treat the practitioners better than we currently are.
Can I put this to you, that the ANC government does not have bad education policies? It's
not
the execution that's the problem.
All the time. It's always the case. I mean, in fact, guys, I on the issue of the remuneration of ECD practitioners, I disagree with you that these people cannot be paid. Actually, they can be paid. If we say we are taking that issue of early childhood development seriously, we must show it in the manner in which we treat the people who implement that. Because as a base, early childhood development actually determines whether the child is going to make it or not. Therefore, that is the most critical part in one's education, the start, the foundation. Therefore, if we have these people properly trained and they do their job properly, they must thus be compensated properly, just like any other teachers.
And then the tools to do the job properly, that's also very important.
It's a push and pull thing of how much of the piece of the pie do you give ECD, free tertiary education, nutrition programs. It's literally a pulling of how much this pie can be expanded to.
Yeah, but my stance is that education, just like health, we should not be we should be more serious about. Education. When you are educating a child, you are looking at the future of the country. My biggest issue with the current government has always been infrastructure for early childhood development, but also at these schools at basic education. You hear stories about children falling into
pit latrines,
and you have to address that seriously. It's a serious issue. My other focus is on tertiary education, because in this day and age, if we are talking about the so-called fourth
industrial revolution,
yes, you need educated people. You need people, professionals who when they go to a tertiary institution, and if they are studying IT, they're going to come out able to go into a workplace. And the extension of free tertiary education is very important, because I mean, if you have a grade 12, where are you going to?
But the thing is, the education in 2019 received the biggest share of South Africa's budget, right? Basic education has been allocated 262.4 billion rand in the next financial year, as per Minister Tito Mboweni's budget table last month. But the reality is, we need to ask the question is, are we getting value for our buck?
Yeah.
In the money spent in education.
Well, but you see, Q, I was going to continue on Dikek's point that infrastructure generally it's lagging behind. I mean, the issue of proper sanitation in the rural areas, proper structures. I mean, there are kids who are still studying under trees. So, you know, it brings me to that point of tablets. You see, that's why I say the ANC likes bluffing. How do you No, seriously, guys. How do you promise tablets when there are kids who still don't have basic needs such as a proper sanitation, proper water systems, proper classrooms?
Hmm.
How are you going to give someone, are they going to learn with that tablet in the rain?
Also,
well, you know, so for me, really, the ANC, they get ahead of themselves. The system itself is not based on a proper foundation, but already you are promising things that are far ahead. And then again, on higher education, we push too much free education, but free education in what? For instance, I think we need to get to a point of prioritizing that if you do certain careers, that will move the country forward with the changing times. Those are the things that we need to focus on, but there's little talk about that. It's always an overall free education, and you'll find, if you were to do maybe research, you'll find that 80% of the people benefiting from a free education are in humanities. Mm. Does that take us forward as a country in this fourth industrial revolution? No.
I feel like there's a lot of confusion and maybe sometimes failure to face our issues and dishonesty in terms of how we approach these things. So we have this fourth industrial revolution that everyone is talking about. Okay, cool. We need a complete overhaul of the curricula. Let's just say, for example, we need kids to do coding, robotics, like you were saying the president is promising in all these communities. Okay, cool. Then we need tablets. Then we need computers. You can't do that in a piece of paper. But we need walls first.
Exactly.
We need walls with electricity. We need a network. We need the internet. So put that infrastructure first.
In place.
And then we can proceed as a country, because there are things that if we say tablets and preparing our kids for the next for the challenges of the next generation, then okay, cool. Mm. But then it's going to end up being only the urban provinces that get to benefit. What about the other kids, you know? So we must start from the bottom.
But that's why I was quite fascinated by the EFF manifesto, where they talk about, they really go into detail about their plans for education, talking about decolonized education, which we know about, but also going into details to say they also promise that every learner will get a tablet loaded with all necessary study material. They talk about, the government will build new schools. What I liked about their manifesto was they actually name areas where if the EFF is elected into office, they would build schools. This could be a pipe dream, really, but I feel like it was less lazy than other political parties.
Maratiba, our education arena is going to be free and then compulsory under EFF government. Who are having Arsenal tablet or iPad? Tablet, you come on, it's having any educational programs.
Vuvu, what do you think about the EFF's manifesto and their promises on education?
But EFF is always, their promises, as you were saying, for instance, they are detailed as to where they will do things, for instance, like building schools. They are always detailed. It's nice for them because they are not in the government yet. It's always good and well to talk until you come into government where you see that certain things. For instance, I mean, you can say all sort of things as an opposition because you are not like a governing party that is constrained in terms of budgets and stuff like that. It looks promising. I mean, for instance, on issue of higher free education, they talk more or less the same language with the exception that they also emphasize on this compulsory thing, and I don't know why the ANC never really focuses on that part of the free and compulsory education, because if you make it free, is it free to those who want, or it's free and compulsory to all people who ought to be at school at that particular point in time? Because I mean, even basic education now under the ANC, there's 90% of the school are no-fee schools, but there are kids loitering the streets. Why is that the case? Because we don't emphasize the point of compulsory, that school-going age children cannot be found on the street. There's free nutrition. You won't be hungry when you're at school. Everything is literally free. There's scholar transport for those who stay at far distances. So I like that particular emphasis on compulsory, in that really, as a country, if we want to build a country that is serious, we must make education fashionable and sort of in a sort of a dictatorial way, so to speak, in that everyone who ought to be at school must be at school. That is a country that takes itself seriously. I mean, on other things, as I say, at times they go overboard and sort of being superficial and not saying where the funding, because EFF always looks to have the best plan, but they never say where the money is going to come from to fund all these kind of issues, you see. And that is the intricacies that the ANC has been able to deal with, that when you are in government, they were also talking the same language before they got to government, but now that they're in government, they can see that there are limitations into these kind of issues. But it's not a bad stance.
So here's what I liked about the EFF manifesto on education, is that they are saying under the EFF government, all schools will have remedial teachers. So at schools, you have a phase, grade 1 to grade 3, and you have an age cohort of pupils that should be within that phase. And once you start failing and you are older than the kids, you get pushed forward. You get pushed forward until matric, and then in matric there is a problem because maybe you can't pass, you know. So where you need remedial teachers is people who are equipped, who are trained, who are qualified to identify pupils that are slow learners, pupils that have maybe psychological problems, and they are
also just language barriers.
Yeah. Also language. So those people are able to teach these pupils to a point where they can be able to pass. And we know in a lot of our communities we don't have a special skills schools or schools for children with learning, you know, challenges. So we do need remedial teachers, because the teachers that are currently taking care of a pupil that can grasp a topic in one lesson and one who needs 50 lessons, they are struggling. Also, we know we have an issue in schools of
overcrowding.
So it becomes a nightmare. It ends up being an issue of even the ones that you would have taught them to get distinctions will struggle.
Another issue is, I mean, the DA has been quite sort of pushy about the fact that SATU is holding the education in South Africa at ransom, and they blame the union, the teachers union, for this, and they say that, you know, they don't want certain things, etc., etc. I mean, the union, there's a lot that can be criticized about them, but I also think we underestimate what they have to deal with on a daily basis, teachers in general.
Yes, yeah, no, I agree. I think that the DA stands on SATU stems from their own stance on how they deal with union boss relations across the board, not just at school. They've always had a problem with COSATU in general.
Yeah.
So when they talk about SATU,
which is the biggest teachers union.
Yeah, that's the first thing I think of. It's more so with the fact that they are aligned with the ANC governing alliance than problems that you can point out. Yes, SADC has been a problem. We've seen these scandals of posts being sold and all of that. I get that, but yeah. Secondly, on the EFF manifesto, I agree with you guys. It's very much detailed, but the funding part, I don't get. But I wanted to touch also on the issue of tablets. I think there's an argument you made about do we wait for everyone or do we go to the schools that are ready? We have two provinces that have been rolling out tablets, and they've been the two most consistent in terms of being top performers. That is Gauteng and Western Cape. And the nice thing about it, and
it's quite urban though.
Yeah. But the nice thing though also is that those two provinces are ruled by two different parties. And do we attribute the performance to the rollout of this technology? Or what do you think?
So I always look at Gauteng and the MEC here, Panyaza Lesufi, and he gets a lot of praise for the stuff that he rolls out and his general stance on education. And the thing is, I look at other provinces. If you look at the Eastern Cape, perhaps, if you look at your low performing provinces,
Limpopo,
you don't have people in those political, because remember, while education is a national competency, these MECs have play an important role in the rollout of infrastructure, and so as a result, you need people A, that know what they're doing, and B, have the political will to go and fight for certain projects to be to be implemented. And I think that's what we don't see, to deal with what you were talking about, Zimasa, with dealing with the lack of buildings and water and electricity in schools. As a MEC, if the media is reporting that there are kids in Vryheid that are crossing a river, it doesn't do much for you to just go and say, okay, how can we solve this issue? How can we resolve it and then get on with business? But there seems to be this kind of, I don't know, if it's...
Just last week, Kwaneta, I saw on SABC News that there were pupils who drowned on their way to school in Matatiela. So that's around the area where I grew up in. And you see there, although there's been some differences, and we are very grateful to basic education, but you know what, it's bad. It's sad.
But it's almost as arrogance to say, well, we can't help everyone. But try.
But the thing is, in Eastern Cape, I'm not sure who exactly is being helped, you know? So because you see a school that was a mud school in 1994, it's still a mud school. You see a river that you used to cross as a child to school, there is still no bridge.
Yeah.
So you wonder, you know, but who exactly is getting this money?
But you see also, to those MSC's defense compared to Panyaza. Panyaza doesn't really have a lot of issues. It doesn't have mud schools. It doesn't have children.
And he never had to begin with.
So nice. Already he's moving from a position of advantage in that most of the funds have to go to these functions of such as tablets and all. Whereas those people, they still have to deal with the basics of,
but not rooting out the fact that there's corruption.
No, absolutely. Corruption is there. Actually, corruption takes us backwards in that already the resources that are there are not enough. The fact that we haven't moved forward that much in those provinces, it means the resources are not enough. And then on top of resources not being enough, there are people who are taking for their own personal benefits, and it doesn't really help. But it is what it is.
It is what it is. Thank you, guys. I think this was a very important discussion. I think you guys can agree with me that we have a lot more to say on it, but we will be unpacking different issues and different promises that political parties have been making in the run-up to the elections. As we record today, there's 50 days to the elections. Guys, are you ready? Are your tackies clean?
I will read.
We are ready.
ready. We are ready for the election. On your mark,
I will get set. We are ready for the
election. Thank you guys very much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Be sure to share this podcast and let us know what you think about it under the hashtag STPoliticsWeekly.